That might be tricky. Hi, Annie. Welcome.
Oh,
Annie, yay. Hello.
Hello.
Fidelma, we're looking forward to the session too. Thank you for your little message there. We saw it.
Yes,
well done.
I was just trying to respond to it. At some point, I want to. Caroline.
Hi, Caroline Catfield. I'm afraid we're going to call you Catfield now, Caroline. You had us guessing.
Yes, Caroline is not as interesting as Catfield, but.
Well, unless your name is Caroline Catfield, but in which case. I don't know. Yeah, Catfield's good. Works with me. Welcome, Omar. Thank you for just joining us. How are we doing? We're 13 people in. We've only got about another, 250 to go.
Yeah, Michelle, you're fine. You've come in muted and you'll stay muted. So don't worry. Hi, Omar. Lovely to see you. Hi, Philippa. No, not Philippa. Pippa. I've just renamed you randomly. Sorry about that. So you can have your camera on or off, folks. It's entirely up to you. I'm going to be dipping in and out just until we've got other people in, and we're just waiting for Helen too. So I should be back in a moo. I'm going to grab some water.
And we're expecting a lot of people, folks, so we'll probably ask you to keep your microphones off just so we don't hear all of your interesting noises in the background. I've told all of my interesting noises just to keep quiet for an hour. And for those of you that are wondering, Nus, who's there on the screen, she's a colleague of ours. She's going to help us manage all the chat. So if you can switch the chat on the right-hand side, if there's things you want to say along the way, any questions you want to ask along the way, you can pop it there in a chat on the right-hand side, and Nus will grab that for us. And then when we come back next time, we'll try to answer as many of those questions. If there's things we can answer along the way, we'll do our best to do that. Hi, Tam. Hi, Claire. Hi, Grace.
You're mute.
Hi, Kathy. Lovely beach you're sat at there. We see you. We know what's going on. I hope, in a way, I'm kind of thinking, wouldn't it be lovely if that's a real beach? If Kathy's actually sat in the Bahamas. Not in front of a screen. So we're just waiting for everyone to join us, folks, and then we'll. Sorry, say that again.
That is a better beach, isn't it?
It's a beautiful beach, Kathy. It's a beautiful beach. I mean,
thank you.
You know, Torquay is lovely at this time of year.
Whitley Bay, all the way.
Oh, Whitley Bay. Sorry, no, the wind's blowing the wrong direction for Whitley Bay, and I can't see seagulls.
You can see the sea actually from my house, so it's very nice. Very blessed to live here. And we have a Helen.
Well, our Helen.
Our Helen, not just a random Helen.
Yay. Yeah. Hello, Helen.
Hello.
We're glad you're here.
Yes, we did need you somewhat. So we're glad you've taken the time to join us today. So folks, we're just going to freestyle, I think, until we get to 5 o'clock. And then we'll be beginning promptly then. So feel free to go to the loo.
Well, my children are happily bribed to not go on online until 5:05.
I mean
5:06.
Encouraged and motivated. You said bribed. I think you meant encouraged and motivated.
Yeah, my children have gone out and it's raining here, so they're not very happy.
Where have they gone?
And I've just turfed the entire family out. Go and play football in the rain for a bit. You'll be fine. Yeah. But I do have cats here who may wander into the screen. Hopefully not, but they may.
So we've got lots more people joining us.
Okay.
Charlene, Nick, we've got somebody's iPhone. Rebecca, so hello to everybody.
It's lovely to see people's faces as well. I totally understand people keeping their cameras off, but it's nice to see people's faces.
Yeah, Always nice to see a smiley face.
Especially with a beach background. It's particularly nice to see a beach background, I must admit.
Yeah, that's really cool, isn't it, that beach background?
Do you know, I did that. God, what was that? Oh, didn't I try it out, Phil and Helen? And it was supposed to be like a really cool office background with like a plant and white walls, which just isn't my house at all. And every time I moved backwards, I disappeared. And then it's actually hanging on the wall, kept coming through every few minutes. I was like, oh, I'm just going to leave it. Yeah.
Something from a terrible movie.
It was disturbing, actually, yeah.
So for those of you that have joined recently, you'll see, if you've not used Zoom before, you'll see on the right-hand side, if you go to the bottom of your screen, you can see a little tab that says chat. And you can click on that, and then that opens the right-hand side of your screen where you'll find our colleague Nus, who's also on your screen, looking smiley. She can help you with the chat. If there's things that you want to just contribute along the way, even if it's just to say hello, like some of you have, you can chat it there. We're not going to turn people's microphones on. Just because clearly that will get completely chaotic. But I think we thought if you had a specific thing you wanted to say, you can put it in the chat there, and then Nus will alert us to that fact. And we might be able to deal with that.
But if not, if when I'm watching things like this, sometimes I'll have a specific question that I think that's just popped into my head now. And sometimes it's like a week later, I think, oh, we should have said that.
Yeah.
So just use the chat function, because what we'll do at the end, we'll save that and we'll use some of the chat to start the Q&A really next week. So we want to do a live Q&A so that you, if you would like to come next week, or people that maybe have watched this on the website, they will be able to watch it and reflect and then ask us a question. But of course, you can come back, you can ask your question live, or if you're not able to join us, you could just put it in the chat and we will still be able to answer that question. And that session will also go on our website, so you're able to watch it, you know, in the bath or wherever, you know, it's where
on the beach or
on
anywhere.
Beach, yeah. Indeed, it will be. Yeah.
I'm not sure I'd be trusted with technology in the bath. I would drop it.
No, I know. I have dropped in the bath, actually. I dropped my phone down the loo not long ago because, you know, I just thought it was in my back pocket. This is too much information already, isn't it? But we're here to share, and this is how it's going to be. I'm sorry. But yeah, I sort of just forgot that it was in my back pocket, and down it went into a council-owned toilet. So it was not, yeah. I have a new phone now, anyway.
You say that like that's significant somehow.
Not that it was cancelled.
No. Other toilets are available if you want to drop your phone.
I wonder if it makes a difference.
I literally don't know.
So we've got a few more minutes. We've got more people joining us, and we'll just keep this open for a few more minutes, and then we'll start at 5. So hello for everyone that's just joining us. I am Annie. This is my colleague Phil. We'll do proper introductions at 5, and you'll see Helen and our colleague Nus. Nus is going to be in charge of chat, the chat function, so she'll be moderating that and saying hello. And if anyone's got any questions or any problems that they're experiencing, you can go to the chat function and you can send Nus a message privately. You know, particularly if you want a compliment or on a hair, for example, you might not want the whole group to see that. So you can send that privately. However you want to use that chat function is entirely up to you. But we've got some ground rules. We're going to bring those up at when we begin at 5. So we'll just wait until we hit 5.
I just want to say I'm really conscious of my hair now. Thank you for that.
Sorry. Because I've washed mine as well. Now I'm feeling really like... Because actually Phil and Helen and Nus saw my hair yesterday, which was essentially a bird's nest, I think is fair.
Tried to hide it, hadn't you?
There was a hiding. Yeah, there was. It's definitely. Sort
you mean that bird's? You mean the bird's nest? Is that what you mean?
It's actually my hair. Thank you. But I'm getting really grey as well. So when I'm on the camera, I'm thinking, oh my God, look at my roots. And I mean, I don't go to the hairdressers, I just use the box dyes. But you can't get the box dyes at the moment. So I'm thinking, oh God, what am I going to do?
Welcome to Hairdressing 101, everybody. Thank you for joining us.
In for assessments, but essentially we thought we'd start with hair and see where it ended up. So
I wasn't planning on remaining on camera, but I feel like I've almost...
I think you should now, yeah.
I think you're here now. Yeah, I hadn't realised. So yes. Hello, everybody.
Hello, Jackie.
Just waiting for folks to join us. Hi, Jackie. Hi, Samuel. We see you there. Hi, Emma. Joss. Everybody.
Gorgeous girl. Hi. Oh, they're all girls are gorgeous, by the way. It's just I know Jackie, that's all. So,
I've just come back from a bike ride and I've just noticed my hair.
Oh, see, about my hair.
Oh, you missed, if you were with us 2 minutes earlier, Jackie, you would have had the hairdressing chat.
A bike ride in the rain.
Oh, nice. You
should have brushed it first.
So we're starting to fill up. We've got another couple of minutes where we can discuss hair, if you wish.
Yeah, Phil, do you want to add anything about hair?
I just want to add that I'm glad that I can talk about hair for a few years longer. For those blokes on the chat, from as the time goes on, you just think, hair chat, I remember it well.
Oh, Phil's got the whole silver fox thing going on, don't you think, ladies? I'm thinking silver fox, definitely.
I just don't want to know what that means. Well, I know what it means, I just don't want to go there.
Compliment.
It is a compliment. My husband's got a mink fork, and that's starting to go a bit silver on the top as well, so he's definitely, silver fox. With a mohawk.
How are we doing for time? We're nearly there.
A minute to go. And this is where we get a massive rush of people in, isn't it? Yeah, we're up to about 89.
Well, I'm thinking that there might be a few social worker colleagues of mine that might be fashionably late. I'm just guessing.
It's not like social workers.
I'm just guessing.
I can't believe it. Sorry, that was really rude.
No, they'll be on their way from something else.
I need to defend all social workers and say,
No.
Well, we've got 96 folk here that are here bang on time.
Yeah, that's pretty good. That has changed my worldview, actually. I will cascade this to the families that I work with. That it is, Right, I'll stop. Do you know what? When I overdo these sort of things, I always say, right, I'm Northern, I swear, and I will run over. But because you're social workers, you're used to that. And everyone normally laughs, and that normally breaks the ice, and I normally feel slightly better about myself. Anywho, we have hit 5 o'clock, so I'm sure we'll have more people join us as the following minutes come on. But to start promptly, I'm going to welcome you all to this Zoom chat. I'm not going to lie, this is the first time that I have done anything on this scale. I feel very responsible at the moment for pretty much everybody's internet and everything else, everything technical. So first of all, if anything goes wrong, with me, with my internet, the meeting may stop. I don't know what to do if that happens. So I'm not gonna lie to you. We don't think that will happen. It hasn't happened yet, and we've hosted a few of these now just in the sort of Teams, but we've never had this many people. We don't think that it will be a problem with you all having your cameras on. If you want to have your cameras on, you of course don't have to. You can turn it off at any point, but if you'd like to keep the camera on, it's nice to see smiley faces. No pressure. If you want to be sad, that's fine. Entirely up to yourselves. So, we don't think that will affect the connectivity or the bandwidth or other technical words. If it does, we'll let you know. Nurse is going to be keeping an eye on that. If you have missed the first few minutes when we were essentially talking about hair, then I will be able to introduce you to Nurse, our colleague. You should see her along the top somewhere. And she works with us at Strength and Practice, and Nurse is going to be looking at the chat. So if you hover down to the bottom of the screen, you'll see a chat function. You can click on that, and it should bring up on the right hand of your screen Zoom group chat. So if you want to say hi, if you want to ask a question or make a point or share ideas or advice, guidance, support, disagree with us, agree with us, whichever, you can use that chat function. At the end of the meeting, the chat will be saved. We'll keep it open for about 10 minutes if people want to swap any further ideas or even contact details, but we will keep that open for a little while. And we will save that chat, and anything that's in there in terms of any questions or any pertinent points or running themes that people pick up on, we will deal with a week today, next week at the Q&A. So the Q&A is an opportunity for you to either come on and go live and ask your own questions to either the presenters or to share your own tips, hints, advice, useful, helpful ideas, things that have helped you, challenges that you've worked your way around. This is your opportunity. We want this to be a real sort of, not to sound too much like a hippie, but a sharing experience for everybody. And let's all kind of try and help each other. We are certainly not the experts. We are learning all the time. I am learning, Phil's learning, Helen's learning, Noose is definitely learning all the time. She was a bit of a technophobe a couple of weeks ago, but she's doing really well. So we want this to be a shared experience. You can, of course, always get in touch, probably with me, which is annie@strengthenandpractice.co.uk. And at any point, you can go on our website and there's a contact us button on there as well. So without further ado, I'm going to introduce my colleagues. I'm then going to go on to some ground rules. And then we've got some questions for my colleagues to answer. And we'll go from there. We'll see how we'll go. Okay, so I'm Annie, hello, and I am the founder and writer of Survive and Safeguarden, which is a parent's guide to the child protection process. I'm a birth mum that's been through several sets of proceedings myself in respect of my own children and family. I'm also a care leaver, so I was in foster care myself and went through the foster care system as a child. I launched my website about 5 years ago, and I've recently joined the team at Strengthen and Practice as a social care trainer. I'd like to introduce my colleague, Helen Rodwell.
Hello, hi everyone. So my name's Helen Rodwell. I'm a clinical psychologist. I've been qualified 20 years and I've got a background working in the NHS, so working in CAM services and prisons and young offender centres. And I work independently now and I do a mix of therapeutic interventions. I'm a therapy practitioner and I use dyadic developmental psychotherapy therapeutically. And I also do lots of assessments for family courts and for local. Over to Phil.
Thank you, Helen. So I'm Phil Rogotti and I'm a social worker and trainer with Strengthening Practice. And I've got about the same amount of years of experience as Helen has, but in the social work field. So I started my career in education social work and then spent some time in duty and assessment teams, front door kind of social work, followed by a whole range of other fostering, adoption, what we used to call long-term social work, and then ended up in a therapeutic social work setting where I stayed for quite some years and ended up managing a really lovely team of therapists, counsellors, social workers, family intervention kind of folks. So my passion still alongside my training work and strength and practice work is anything that works therapeutically for families and children. What do we do that really helps them? So I can very easily be tempted away with anything that looks like a puppet, clay, crayons, anything that's a little bit silly. So I might have to watch myself along the way. That's me. I'm really happy to be here.
That's great. Thank you. Now, I can see somebody's raised their hand already. If you could put that into the chat function, because there's so many of you that we're now up to 145. Unfortunately, I won't be able to manage everybody's raised hand. So if there are any problems, you can contact Nurse Bibby, who is on the chat function here. She's just put a message there. You can contact her privately if there are any problems with the tech, or you just want to make a point. You can also just use the group chat if you want to address the whole group as well. Everybody will be able to see that. So I'm going to bring up now, this is the bit where I get a bit scared. I'm going to bring up the ground rules. If you bear with me one moment. She says. Aren't I good? Hang on. Right. There we go. Share. Okay. So these are the ground rules for our session. They're pretty self-explanatory. I'm going to leave them up there for just a second. And really, I guess it's pretty obvious stuff that you would expect from people that work with children and families. So we're looking at confidentiality. I won't be discussing any families that I'm working with, for example, and I wouldn't expect that anybody would discuss any identifying details, but you are able to say, you know, this is a running theme or anything like that. If you don't agree with us, or if you want to raise any issues or different viewpoints, certainly please do so. Please keep yourself on mute, otherwise it becomes slightly unmanageable. We are recording the session, and that will will go onto our website. And the last one, be kind and curious. So I'm going to stop sharing my screen. There we go. Okay. So I've got some questions that we went through when we thought about how do we want to do this and how do we want this to run. We want this to be a really helpful session for you so that you can go away with some really good ideas on how to work in a remote way in terms of assessment when it comes to children and their families. So I'm going to start off with question one, and really we're going to start at the very beginning, and it does start with you, the practitioner, the professional. Before you begin your assessment, where are you? So Helen, I'm going to come to you first. How would you answer that question?
Okay, so I've had to think about this question, and I sent you a slide, Annie, so I wonder if you just want to put that up. So just to kind of reassure everyone, this is not going to suddenly be a death by PowerPoint type discussion now, but I've just got like a bit of a summary slide, because when lockdown began and when obviously all the kind of restrictions came in about how we're going to work, you know, my first starting point was, you know, gosh, I was being very selfish and kind of thinking, okay, well, where am I in this, and what do I need to do, what do I need to kind of, you know, do to kind of regulate myself, how am I going to work, how's this all going to work out? And actually, when we think about any piece of work that we're doing with a family or a child or a parent, you know, all assessments, all interventions start with us first. You know, we kind of set the tone, we kind of set the structure, we kind of set what's going to happen. So actually where you are right now, you know, in this current COVID situation is like really crucial. So there's three main points that I've thought about. And the first one is really thinking, okay, well, where are you in terms of your own environment? So suddenly your home has become your workplace, or your spare room, if you have a spare room, or you've got to share the lounge and suddenly work in your lounge or on your kitchen table. You know, this is a new environment to work in. So we've all had this journey, I think, about thinking about, well, how do I do this? How do I manage this transition between working at home and then switching off and being back at home? Which mode am I in? Like, which kind of function am I doing now? And actually, how safe does it? How confidential does it feel? How do I use this equipment? I think for me, the first couple of weeks was like, okay, well, how do I get Zoom to properly work? And how do I pull people in? Or how do I make sure people can't hear the dogs barking? I think finally I figured out, because I hope you can't hear them. But all these environmental things first. And then secondly, it's really thinking about ourselves, you know, where are we? So COVID has affected all of us in very different ways. And I think at times it might have brought out strengths that we have, but it might also have brought out wobbles or weaknesses that we've had. So one thing to really think about, actually, it's very normal and it's okay to feel whatever you feel. I think a lot of people are feeling a bit of a wave of one minute feeling okay, next minute feeling a bit kind of crazy. And kind of thinking, well, how do I help myself to kind of feel just right, but also be kind to myself in terms of however I feel and however I'm moving, that's okay right now, because we're all being affected by this. And then kind of checking in with yourself, so again, being kind, but thinking about how am I feeling? So if you're about to do a piece of work or about to have an interact with someone online or on the phone, then do a bit of a check-in, like how am I doing? So one of the things that I will often do therapeutically, it's just do a little bit of a body scan, and I just think, well, how's my head feeling? How's my chest feeling? How's my stomach feeling? And really as a way of just kind of centering in and just becoming focused on, okay, I'm almost like I'm getting ready to settle and have this interaction. So, you know, so at this time, I think it's really important, and it's really important to give yourself permission to kind of consider your, you know, and if you need to take a moment before you start a piece of work or an interaction with someone, that's okay. You know, I think like, you know, think about kind of being on time. We joked about people being late. Well, maybe it's okay to be late for a moment if it means that you've checked in with yourself and have got yourself ready to connect with people. You know, and think about, you know, using strategies that help you put things on hold while you're doing your piece of work or your interaction. So I very often want to, you know, I have a post-it frenzy. Right, done everything on my mind. Right, okay, I'll deal with that at 5 o'clock, or I'll deal with that at 6 o'clock. Yeah, then put things on side. and really think about kind of your self-regulation. Okay, so it's okay not to feel regulated, but it's really worth just thinking about all those techniques that are out there, like breathing, you know, being mindful. You know, there's a lot of cliches around that, but actually they really can help in terms of helping to become grounded and self-regulated, because when we regulate ourselves, we're much, much more likely to be able to connect with people, have empathy, maybe less task focused. Okay, so it's just finding that sense of who, where am I? How do I feel just right? And then my final thing was really before every interaction you have with someone, is just think, well, why are you about to meet them? And what's the purpose? And almost like setting your intention really clear. So if it's a hello, and that might be different from a, okay, I'm checking in with you because we talked about something really difficult last time. We just kind of have that kind of, I guess, that kind of priority about, well, why are we about to discuss something or think about something? Is it to give bad news? Okay, or is it to kind of share and explore something?
That's really helpful. Thank you. And Phil, do you have anything to add to that?
Yeah, thanks, Helen. Really lovely. I think that in lots of ways for us, I'm noting that there's lots of different professionals doing lots of different jobs. Getting a sense of where you are before you go to do the thing that you're going to go and do is such a powerful thing, isn't it? Because actually, in our busy world, our adjustment now, many of you will be working from home. Many of you will have had to find space to create your office, whereas previously you will have left home and gone to your office and then gone from there to go and do the piece of work that you're doing. So the strength in getting a sense of what your work environment looks like is not only about your physicality, but it's also about your environment and also about how you put your head into that space. So when you're surrounded by your colleagues, you're hearing it day in, day out, you're talking about casework, you're talking about the kinds of things that are going on, you're fully absorbed in the thing that you're about to go and do. So there's a skill that we're all learning, actually, and we've all had to learn this quite quick, haven't we, folks? So we're learning a skill that looks like, okay, this is work, how do I get ready for this piece of work that I'm going to do? So you might find that you've got so many distractions at home that it's difficult to get yourself into that work space. But it's really important that before you go to do the work, some of you might still be doing that physically, but what we're talking about for this purpose is, of course, we're connecting online, aren't we? That before I do that connection, am I ready to do that? Have I got my work self ready to do those things? So is my thinking straight? Have I done the prep that I'd normally do? And next time around, session two, we'll talk a lot more about assessments, but the preparing for that is really about you going, okay, what do I need to do here? What am I hoping to achieve? How comfortable do I feel about that? Where are my anxieties lying? Because if you're like me, there'll be some little things in your day-to-day job that you always might feel a little anxious about. And we know that means you have to spend a little bit more time preparing, a little bit more time just reading some things, getting some things ready, whatever it is that's going to help you. In this new environment, you might find that you're struggling to do that because you haven't got the normal sources of support around you. So there is something about that just right feeling that Helen was talking us through that's still up on the screen there. What is feeling just right to you? What does that really look like? And does it feel different now? Because probably it will, because you've got all those other influences and all those other things going on. So I think that's really important for us to get that right. Annie, yeah.
Thank you. So that's really helpful. Thinking about it from my perspective and thinking about it from the families that I'm working with, we don't often think about you, with all due respect, and in the nicest possible way, we don't. So we don't think about you having, as almost a four-dimensional person, we don't think about you as having a life or a family or even a home. So that, and all of those things are now going to come in, which of course, you know, is because of the environment that we're having to work in. And we'll talk a little bit more about that later. But that's really useful. And I think it's probably useful for me to take back and with the families I'm working with, to just gently remind them that actually this is new for everybody. And that social workers don't actually have all the answers, but we're all going to have to learn together. And I guess that brings me on to my next question, which I think I'm going to direct at Phil first. How would you sort of build rapport in this new way? How would you do that, Phil?
Okay. But first thing I want to say is, let's just have a look at what's going on for us here. There's 155 people online here. And there's something about saying, well, clearly we can't talk to you all, but because of the professional skills that we've got, we can be aware that you're a human sitting, having a human experience, the same as I'm a human sitting here having my human experience. And my starting point always for the sense of rapport is just based on what Helen said right at the start. I'm checking in with myself and I'm thinking, right, what's happening for me? What am I feeling? What am I experiencing? What's going on for me? And then I have to do the same for that other person. Think, well, I wonder what's happening for them. I wonder what's going on for them. I'm curious about all the folk on my screen right now. I'm really curious. There's some people I recognize, lots of people I don't know. But instead of me being embroiled in this task, which is taking a lot of focus and a lot of my emotional energy, I've got to be more focused on going, right, this is not about me. This is about what's going on for those people. So if you can put my slide up, Annie, I'll talk you through some just really simple points about rapport. You all know about building rapport and you know what that looks like. So I just want to talk us through some really, really simple things. Some of these things you'll recognize. Some of these things will be like, well, yeah, of course, that's really straightforward. Let's just remind ourselves. I'm repeating this from last time because it really matters. Check in with yourself. Actually, how are you feeling? Before I'm going to do that piece of work, and that piece of work is about me helping them. And that's, we're in a helping profession. So this is not about me feeling good about things. It's about me helping them however I can. What's going on for me? What's my mood right now? Have I checked in enough? Am I emotionally aware enough? What's that feeling that I've got? Where's that coming from? So I do that first. How am I feeling? Am I ready for this? What's rumbling around for me? And where do I think that might be coming from? And just spend a little bit of time with that. And this is what you'd normally do in your car on the way to go and see someone. As you're leaving the office, you're a bit like, oh gosh, you know, I've got these other things in my mind, other things I'm thinking about. Once I've done that, then actually in this new world, the same as in the other world, if you like, how are you looking? Now, folks, I'm not talking about the state of your hair here, okay? Forget the state of your hair for now. What I'm talking about is saying, actually, how's my body doing here? You know, resting face? That kind of thing. For some of you, you do need to check in with your resting face because guess what, folks? It's right there in the camera. It's right there. Now, when you're out and about in the real physical world, away from the online world, you can do different things with that, can't you? Because you're in the car driving, looking at people, looking in the mirror, and you can put on that little face when you knock on the door. Here, it's really focused through this very narrow aperture. So how are you looking and where are you looking? What's distracting you? What might distract you? And as a good example, if I'm a little bit worried about something, if I'm going to come and meet you online and we're going to do some work, it's no good if I'm looking down there, is it? It's no good there, even if I've got notes, even if I've got things, because you're over here. So I need to be able to really work hard with that stuff. So that's point one. Check in with yourself. How are you feeling? How are you looking? And where are you looking? Can I focus myself there? That's where the person is on the other side of the camera. Now, step two, come in properly. Now, I don't mean, you know, if you're going to visit people, presumably, once the door is open, you didn't do cartwheels through the door. You probably walked in normally like normal folk do. So there's some kind of context here for us. Come in properly. When I knock on that door, if I'm doing a physical visit, I understand that social interacting action, don't I? Because I've done it thousands of times and people have come to my door and I understand what the other side looks like. So I know about that moment of transition from me stepping across the threshold into someone's house. This has to be the same, folks. Come in properly. What normally happens when I arrive? So normally when I arrive, I don't come straight in through the door with my agenda and my paperwork. I've got my coat on, I've got my bag. You know, for some of you, you've got several bags and several coats and diaries and all sorts of things. I come in through the door and I'm careful about that moment. I say hello, I smile, I say hello to the children for sure. I'm noticing photos, I'm commenting on them. I'm talking probably about the weather or whatever it might be. All of those things, no reason why we can't still do some of that stuff, even though it's a digital room. Bring the best of you in through the room. So step two, come in properly. Step number three, don't forget your basics. Using non-verbals, you can still do that, but you'll notice online here that, you know, it's no good being subtle. If I want to nod, I need to nod clearly. If I'm smiling, I want to really smile so you can see me smile. We don't need to be cheesy with it, but we do need to be quite careful. I've said here, look, use your non-verbals effectively and purposefully. you need to work the skills that you've got, and you need to be really consciously aware, because some things get missed, don't they? When we've got poor quality connections, for example, if they're on a mobile phone and it's moving everywhere, they won't spot you going, mm-hmm. So you need to go, mm-hmm, okay. You need to be a little bit more than you normally would, probably, otherwise it'd be missed. Take care to speak clearly. I'm trying to take care to do that. And be fully present. You've got other things going on here. Usually you're in their space and they've got other things going on, haven't they? Now, you might be the one that's got things going on in the background. What's happening behind me here? What's that little noise? This is where you need to be. You need to make adjustments for that, don't you? So step three, don't forget your basics, folks. You know this stuff, don't you? You learn all these skills. Refresh those and work them. Step four, shared experiences. They're online, you're online. This is new to us all. No one's been through this before, have they, folks? So we've got something immediately that we share with them straight away. So there's something that we can talk about. Important in rapport building is a shared experience. I've experienced something the same as you. We can talk about our different perceptions of those things. And let's not be afraid to talk about that. We're not going to share all of our family experience of those things, but we can talk about being isolated at home. We can talk about queuing up in a strange way in supermarkets, because we know that too. That's a really nice thing for everybody. It's a bit of a leveler, probably. Point five, I said I was going to put 5 points, but you'll notice I've been a little bit cheeky. Point 5A, listen well. Use your listening skills. Give them time to talk and then pause before replying. This is our online skill, folks, isn't it? We can't talk over each other because you just don't hear it. Normal conversational to's and fro's aren't going to work in this context. Let them talk. Pause so you know they've finished, and then you talk. And then my thought process has to be, actually, what did they just tell me, and what does that mean? Our anxiety about this new world sometimes drives us to be a bit stuck with actually, I've got this thing I want to say. Oh, they finished right now. No, you need to just pause, just wait. What did they just say? What does that mean? How am I now going to respond to them? Some of that, again, is just really good listening skills. Point 5B, if you like, summary, be kind. What does kindness look like in this context? Sure, some of you are dealing with safeguarding difficulties. Some of you are dealing with challenges out and about there in your day job. But actually, everybody benefits from kindness. And of course, there's no reason why we shouldn't be kind. But when you're busy and when there's lots of other things going on, it's easy to forget those things. And the point I always love is to say, well, why not be human? If I'm struggling with the technology, well, they might be too. Well, I can be human. I'm not a TV presenter. I might not need to worry about those things. I can just be authentic as far as I'm able to. So that's it for me. 5 points, mostly things that we know, folks. But I think we just have to rework that. Thank you.
Thank you very much for that. I'm not sure whether you have anything to add to that, Helen, but I think certainly from my perspective immediately, we can't ignore them, the power differential. And if you are assessing a parent or a family member, whether it's face-to-face or even digitally, there is that power mismatch. And I think the thing that needs to be kept in mind, it's not our job to build rapport with you. As family members, it's not our job. That has to be your job. And we need you to start that conversation. We need you to be the person that does that, and then we can model our behaviour on you. So if you set us a good example in following some of the steps or all of the steps that Phil has pointed out, we are much more likely to then take that and say, oh, this is how it's going to work. That's a normal human interaction anyway, but you've got the added, not difficulty, but dynamic of the power difference. And I think that can't be underestimated. And I think that needs to be kept in mind, particularly given the issue of perhaps digital poverty. So it's difficult to create a rapport. If you are on a rubbishy mobile phone with 3G and you are then automatically seeing that you have not, and the person assessing you or the person online with you has, because they have a laptop, they have a comfortable seat, they have headphones, and there is a difference immediately. So I think the onus has to be on you, the professional, to come towards us. Helen, is there anything you'd like to add to that?
Yeah, I think that's really helpful. and you're recognizing kind of power, and actually just use of technology and what technology you have is a real, it's very symbolic about differences in kind of power and money and finances and all, you know, and social class and all of those things. I think I'd add, there's something about just being really explicit about this. Mm-hmm. So I'm like remembering all these early therapy sessions. So I had to switch all my therapy cases to do them online. And actually, I've discovered you can do TheraPlay online, which is amazing. But actually, it took time to figure out how to do that. And so I had lots of conversations with parents and with children about things like, well, how should we position ourselves? Like, if my face is here, does that feel a bit too much? what kind of feels right? Because usually when you're in a room with someone, you naturally in a way know how to sit or how close to sit or how loud your voice. So online we've got to figure out how to do that. And so I think being really explicit and then kind of practicing a little bit. So another conversation I've had with people about was, well, how are we going to do eye contact? Because if I actually want to look at you, I'm going to have to look at my camera. But if I want to see your face, I have to look down here to see your face. That's going to feel really odd. So let's see. So I'm a big believer in almost like taking the elephant in the room and let's just discuss it. And let's see if we can kind of figure it out together. But as the professional, it's my responsibility to figure out how to make this feel okay and to make it work.
I guess picking up from that, and some of you might automatically see this on the screen. So if I was to sit and look down on you, apart from the fact that you can see the bags in my eyes and it's horrendous and I don't even want to discuss it, but if I'm to look down on you like this, I'm automatically in a position of power. As a person watching that, I would feel like, you know, that those things are really important. Looking at where your camera angle is quite essential, because it feels really uncomfortable. I'm sure it feels really uncomfortable if I sit and look at you, stare at you like that. Whereas if I sit back and I'm quite relaxed and faffing with my hair, it's much more natural, much easier to build rapport with people that way. So I'm going to go on to the next question. It came out of a great conversation that we were having about how we wanted to structure it. And Phil just came out with this, how do you be with a person before you do with a person? So I'm going to throw this across to Phil. How do you be with a person that you're assessing before you do with the person you're assessing? Over to Phil.
Thank you. We knew exactly what you meant, Annie. I think we kind of know this stuff, but it's worth reminding ourselves. So, of course, we're human beings. And in that sense, you say, well, where we land first is to say, well, I'm a human being. What does that mean to me? And I was a human being long before I was a social worker, long before I did different kinds of social work, long before I had a caseload, long before I went to knock on people's doors. And I also am a human being when I come home from doing that job. So when I interact with the other people in my life, what's the part of me which is authentic? Who am I when I'm not at work? What are the elements of me that people engage with? What are the parts of me that are useful and helpful and purposeful? And I just want to check in again, there's that phrase, with myself. Every time I'm carrying out any kind of assessment, have I taken myself to this family? How much of me, where's the best of me here? And the authentic me is usually found in those moments where I let my guard down a little bit. You know that thing, that something happens and you just respond intuitively. What's that thing? The thing that you did without thinking about it very much. The thing that you did that you hadn't pre-planned. You're walking along High Street and somebody stumbles and you reach out to catch them. That's authentic you, if that's what you would do. I hope that's what you do. So catching those moments in your practice and translating them into this setting and filtering them through your professional skills and your learning and your knowledge and all of those other things. So for me, there has to be a part of ourselves that says, okay, if I'm going to be empathic and compassionate, I have to tap into my humanity first. So I have to really focus on saying, what's going on for these people? What is that like to be them? What is their life like? What does this child's world look like? What does this child need from me in this context? It's really horrible for children, isn't it, folks, currently? Really difficult for them to understand what's going on. They've lost so many of the things that they're familiar with that make them feel comfortable. some of those things are us. So in that way, if I appear on a screen and I'm a bit stilted and I am, like Annie said, a bit too close and I'm talking in a funny way and I'm looking in the wrong direction, for children, that's disturbing, actually, because they know me a bit more like this. They know me sitting in their house playing around and jumping around. And we can do those things as long as we're careful and purposeful with it. So I would say don't lose yourself in this new environment. You know how to be you, and the person that they know is you. So bring that person to the camera.
Yeah, I guess a couple of issues with that. Mm. First of all, I think that would be difficult if you haven't had a previous relationship with this person. So yeah. If this is a new referral that's maybe come in from another agency and you are then undertaking an assessment on this family online, I think that would be quite difficult to know the cues to, because you've never had a relationship with them before. So I guess that's something to be aware of, that if you haven't, how are you going to build rapport really quickly? And I guess that harks back to our previous question. The other point, and I notice it's come up in the chat, is if parents or family members don't have the benefit of a camera phone, which to us, I mean, mainly is sort of a given nowadays that everybody has a camera phone, but actually not everybody does. And funnily enough, not every social worker working with a local authority phone has a camera phone. So how would you do this if you were doing it over the phone? That's been brought up in the chat. I'm having to work over the phone. How on earth do you build rapport? There's not even the eye contact there. So I guess these are things that will need more thought. And that's maybe something to discuss next week at the Q&A. And we can think about ways around that and hopefully get some great ideas from people that have experienced that and have got some ways to work around that challenge. Helen, do you have anything to add on that? Or should we move on to the next question?
Well, I'm just going to briefly just repeat myself and say, you know, I think being explicit is really helpful. You know, so being on the phone, you know, so if you've just met someone for the first time on the phone and you can't see them, then I would just ask, what do people need? I'd say, like, would it be helpful if I describe what I look like? You know, would that be helpful to you or not? Or what's it like? Or what do you even like on the phone? Because, you know, I'm aware that for some people, talking on the phone is a very comfortable experience anyway, whereas for other people it isn't. But we're not going to know that unless we kind of ask people and explore it. But with intention of people knowing that it's okay if it doesn't suit them, because I'm actually thinking that, you know, with this imbalance of, you know, if we're in a professional role with a family or with a parent, they might not feel like that can, they could even say it's a problem, because they might be worried about actually, well, how would that be taken then? Like, you know, so what are you going to do if I can't do a phone call? How are you going to do that? So I think it's about having these explicit conversations and actually then thinking, okay, well, how am I going to fix this for you? How am I going to make this feel okay for you?
Absolutely. There's the recurring theme of the families that I'm working with under the sort of umbrella of Survive and Safeguarding. And that is that they do feel that they have to do whatever the social worker says even more now. Now, that was a feeling that they maybe had before out of fear that it might be escalated if they don't. But this has really... it's increased an awful lot. There's a lot of anxiety with the families that I'm working with and who are actually now talking to each other on my Facebook group about, oh God, well, if I don't answer the phone or if I don't show around the house or whatever, or are they going to take me to court? Are they going to take my kids? So there's real anxiety. So I think even just asking the question, we have to be mindful that on its own puts pressure on a parent because they might not know the right answer. And that is a running theme, and we'll come much more into that for the next webinar about information gathering, where you as a parent don't know the right answer to the question that you've been asked during the assessment. I'm going to move on to question four, and this was it's something I feel really strongly about, and we touched on it a little bit when we were chatting at the start. But we make appraisals, of course, when somebody comes into your home, you make an appraisal of that person. So I will. And half, you know, looked a social worker up and down and immediately thought, she's posher than me, she's got more money than me, she's got a car, she's got a posh bag, you know, she doesn't look exhausted, or she does look exhausted, or she's, you know, her shoes are dirty, all sorts of things. She looks stressed, she looks worried, she looks panicked. all these things I can do really well because that person is coming into my home, so I feel really comfortable. I'm on my own turf and I can stage my area however I want it, and have staged my area to suit whatever narrative is around me at that time. And there's a real danger at the moment that I think of staging from both sides. So we were chatting about backgrounds, and that there was a lady had had a gorgeous beach background, and that's fine, and you can put a fake background up during a video call. Because I guess there's a fear from social workers that when you're coming into my home, you're coming into my environment. You only give away what you look like, what clothes you wear and how you hold yourself, what bag you carry and what your phone looks like and how you are with me. I can just guess. I don't know if you're a mum. I don't know if you've got a cat. I don't know if you live on your own. I don't know if you live in chaos with books and stuff everywhere, or whether you live like Zen, you know, I don't know, where everything's white and flawless. I don't know. People with children don't live like that. I certainly never have. But however, now we as family members are being invited into your world because you're working from home. Some people will have a spare room. Some people will have an office. Not everyone does. People are working from their bedrooms, their dining rooms, the living room, the kitchen, wherever they can work at the minute. So we naturally have a window into your home. And we talked about this yesterday. You know, we look behind us and do we check, oh God, well, I can't have that out. You know, I can't have my beer pot out or whatever. You know, I can't have this out because they might think bad things about me. So parents will be doing that naturally. However, social workers will be doing that naturally. So how can we be mindful of this, and how can we not view it with suspicion, but maybe think more about how to work with it? Helen, I'm going to come to you.
Yeah, so again, I'm going to be at risk of repeating myself and kind of saying, oh, it's about being explicit about this. So, you know, when I started to do more online work, then I was very, you know, clear with people about, okay, I'm working in, you know, I work at home anyway, so I'm working in my home office, and kind of describing, I just described the environment that I'm in, but also what I've done to make it feel safe and secure. Like, for example, I've got earbuds in, so only I can hear what's being said, you know, and people can't hear the conversations. But I think you can play around with how you've kind of got ready for the call. So for example, if you were like a health visitor, or if you were a different professional, and actually you might want certain things in your background because they help signify that you're in your professional mode. So for example, if I was going to go and see a lawyer for like legal advice, I'd probably find it quite helpful myself to actually see a few law books. It just would help me kind of, oh, okay, they've kind of got this. Other people might not find that, you know, to be so important. But I think it's okay to actually know that you need to step into your role, and that it doesn't mean that you have to kind of sterilize everything about your home, but just thinking, okay, well, what's my intention about what I want to convey? Okay, because we do that anyway in kind of normal outside world kind of life, and we can do this on this, but we can be a bit more explicit, and, you know, and kind of check in with people about what they want to see, and also what we feel comfortable seeing. Yeah, what we feel comfortable kind of showing to people.
Yeah. So we've had a comment in the chat. I have a parent who really dislikes being seen on the phone. We spend the visit chatting, but the phone is pointed at the child playing. So that, I mean, how would you work around that? I mean, I guess I can understand how that feels. I'm fairly comfortable in front of, you know, you guys, but if I had a social worker assessing me, I might want to point the camera somewhere else. Phil, how would you deal with that?
Yeah, I think, and I know somebody else has mentioned a similar thing in the chat, that the thing that we've all had to get used to, which is uncomfortable for many of us, is seeing ourselves on the screen. So for many of the folk that we're working with and helping, they'll be very used to using a phone text-wise, probably. Most people now use a lot of text functions, because if you think about even Facebook chat, that's just chat, isn't it? So not everyone's as comfortable on a screen. I think it's absolutely fine, like Helen's already said, and we've said before, have that conversation with someone and talk about actually that as an anxiety. Because to be very frank, many of you that are out there at the moment, 150 of us, many of you aren't comfortable on the screen either, I guess. And there's something about saying, well, I don't want to see myself. I don't mind seeing you and talking to you. But, oh, it's horrible seeing myself. So I think it's okay for them to switch their camera off if the particular thing they're using has got that facility. I would say, as a professional, that I would always, if they're able to, keep my camera on so that they can see me. That's part of my credibility and part of me being present and part of the stuff that Helen was saying, setting the tone in the right way. But if they want to have the camera off, I think that's fine. And we just have a conversation around saying, actually, yeah, it feels strange, doesn't it, to be seeing yourself on a camera like that. And then depending on the kind of assessment you're doing, of course, you will need to then grapple with, well, how are we going to do this? Because really, I could do with at least seeing you face to face. And at some point, I'm going to need to be able to talk to your children and they're going to need to talk to me. But have that conversation with them and talk about why it matters and why that's important, because they would expect that you're going to be in their house. But it is more exposing in this way because you've got nowhere to go. It's all about you and your face. And that's a different thing. I think we have to respect that for people. And the same with regard to people's backgrounds. You might not like the idea of people seeing into your house because that's private, and you might feel, quite rightly, some of you, that that's risky. I think if you feel that, well, you talk to your families about that first and foremost. You need to build trust. They need to build trust with you in both ways, and you need to understand how that relationship works. So we grappled, didn't we, folks, as we were preparing this, with the whole idea of, if I'm appraising them, looking into their family home through a camera, why am I so uncomfortable with them doing the same with me? And I completely understand that for some of us, there are safety concerns about that. We shouldn't play fast and loose with that. But it's worth us then just bedding that in and going, actually, now this is happening to me. How do I feel about this? What am I learning about myself? And you'll see behind me, you know, I'm kind of like, oh, you know, can they see what books I've got on my shelf? And they're all lovely books, and I'm okay with that. But I still had a moment where I kind of thought, oh, maybe I should move some of that stuff or move things around, because they might make a judgment about me. But then I'm like, no, it's okay, actually, because that's me. And I think that has to be the process, doesn't it, Annie, to say, well, think that through for yourself. What are you experiencing there? And make that then about that family. What is it like for them to experience that?
Absolutely. So a couple of points. So Jill Bailey said, I think we need to make sure we don't have double standards. We shouldn't put on a background and then expect that families tell you everything.
Good point, Jill.
Say that that's very much how it feels in a face-to-face assessment. It does feel like I have to show you everything of me and you don't have to show me anything of you. So this is almost leveling the playing field a little bit. So whilst you might not feel very comfortable with it, and that's entirely entirely understandable, it does actually, it may actually feel more comfortable for parents, for them to come into your world a little bit. There's a couple of points that I want to just raise really quickly, because it feels like the elephant in the room if we don't. And that's around the issue of domestic abuse, or the issue of parents perhaps only showing you what they want you to see. So there's been some discussions that I've had with places such as Research and Practice, Lancaster University, and Nuffield Family Justice Observatory. And we're thinking really about, if a parent is going to undertake an assessment, how do you know that the person that you have concerns about is not behind that camera, behind that phone? The fact is, you don't. The fact is, you can't know that. The only thing you can do practically right now is try and establish a rapport that is strong enough to take that level of trust, where you can say, are we on our own? Are you able to talk freely? Is there anything that I can do to make this easier for you? I'm not sure you will all find your own ways through this, but I do think that we need to be mindful that that not everyone will be in a safe place to be assessed. Equally, and there was some guidance put out from the Children's Commissioner, which I have to say, completely honestly, I didn't much like, because I thought it was very blaming towards families, and immediately was quite suspicious of families, and saying that families will only show you some of, quite deliberately, some of what's going on in their home. But the truth is, we do that anyway. You know, whenever I had a social worker coming over to do an assessment with me, I would clean up beforehand. I would make sure that things were perhaps strategically placed. It was always the right level of tidy and the right level of clean. So it didn't look like a show home, but it equally didn't look like a pigsty. So I think we need to be a bit fair at the minute. And right now, most of us are working from home. We've got kids at home. I've got two young children at home, one with special special needs. I'm trying to manage him and his needs. I'm trying to manage my daughter and her needs, their education, two jobs, some public service work, trying to support my families. I'm all over the place at the minute. So yeah, it's stressful. It's tough, but it's stressful and tough for all of us. And I think this is probably the first time that that's ever happened. So I guess it goes right back to the beginning. Check in with yourself. What are you trying to get out of this assessment? What are the risks? What would happen if that person that you are concerned about is the other side of the camera, and therefore the person that you're assessing can't answer freely? How are you going to manage that? How are you going to work through that? I'm going to go on to question five. We're running slightly short on time, but I think we'll probably be okay. We're aiming to finish for six, but I am again going to leave the chat function open for you to swap other ideas, ask any more questions, or just leave any details of your own organisation if you want to do so. And I guess it's about, we're all in this really crazy situation. How do we help families tell the story of now? An assessment, historically for me, has felt a little bit like a tick box exercise. I was asked once, you know, Annie, how often do you wash your towels? And I thought, I don't know the right answer to that question, because if I say it's every time the kids have a bath, which is actually the truth, it's going to sound like I'm a bit OCD. But if I say it's a week, is that too long? I don't know the right answer. So, and it did feel like, well, actually it's really irrelevant, because my house isn't the issue. The issue is my mental health, and the issue is my children's safety around my mental health, which doesn't really involve whether my towels are clean, unless they're absolutely minging. So how do we avoid a tick box exercise? How do we avoid assumptions, especially now? So we are leaving ourselves. Why don't you will look at my background. You will make an assumption of me. I will tell you straight away, and we had a laugh about this the other day, didn't we? That I live in a council house. I live on a council estate. I'm quite proud of that. I don't try and hide it. I am very proud of where I live. And it's not great and it's not perfect, but you know what? It's home, and it's got all the things I love in it and all the people I love in it. But you will have made an assumption about me, or you'd be drawn inferences about me based upon my background. So how do you stop making assumptions, particularly now? Helen, how would you do that?
I think, you know, we're all going to be making assumptions and judgments and appraisals all the time. That's like, you know, that's kind of what our brains would do in any kind of interaction or with any information that, you know, that's in front of us. So, you know, so again, I think it's about, you know, just asking the question. So if you're making an assumption, or if you have a hypothesis or a thought about something, it's about, well, knowing that and kind of testing it. So being curious and having that conversation about it, you know, almost like wondering aloud about it, so that actually any assumptions that you're making almost become like a shared assumption that you can then, you know, think about, you can be curious about and kind of figure it out. Because actually that's what a true, you know, good assessment or intervention would be, wouldn't it? It wouldn't be just about extracting, give me the information. It would be about taking information in, or in this interaction, thinking about it, and then putting it back out there. So it becomes a shared assessment, like a shared story, you know, a shared understanding about what that family needs or about what's going on for them.
Yeah, definitely. And Nurse has just made a really good point that building rapport is based on some level of mutual interaction. So Phil, how would you, because I mean, this is obviously very key. How do we avoid assumptions?
Yeah, so I think this session we're talking about relationships, aren't we? So what we have to hang on to is, before we make assumptions and judgments, because to be honest, folks, if you're doing an assessment, at some point you're going to have to form some conclusions about what you've learned, really. But our starting point is to say, how does this family roll? How do these individuals roll? What's it like to be these children? And I need to be hearing from them in as many different ways as possible. And particularly from the child's perspective, say, actually, if we took this as an example, if I was your social worker, Annie, and I was carrying out a parenting look at her face, and I was carrying out a parenting assessment just based on this, I've got no sense at all of what it's like to be a child in that house. I've got no sense at all of how the family in a wider sense interact. All I can form a judgment on is to say, well, I can see lovely photos in the background, and there's a story that goes along with those photos, isn't there? And, you know, so I might want to ask you to kind of say, oh, I can see some photos in the back. Is that something that would be useful for us to talk about? So rather than just kind of going, oh, that looks like a skanky house, or whatever you might be thinking in the back of your head, I'm engaged in that and I'm kind of going, oh, I can only see a corner in your house. Just tell me what else is going on in your house. Where is everybody, for example? Because I think relationship building it really hinges on me being interested in them, for them. And me being interested in what their life looks like and how things work for them. I can do that if I'm in their house because I can ask curious questions. We put it in the ground rules about being curious. And I think that runs through our whole relationship building emphasis this time round. Is that actually, let's not make judgments, but let's be curious with them. And let's ask the right kinds of questions that allow them to tell us a little bit more. And what's lovely is when families are able to go, oh yeah, of course, I hadn't thought you can't see any of that. I don't want to put people in a position where I'm saying to them, can you give me a tour around your house? Well, no, actually, no, I'm not going to. Because I'm not going to give you a tour around my house. Mm. So I need to ask them about that. And I need to kind of be curious with them about, well, describe it for me. Explain what it's like, because all I can see is that.
I think that's a really good point. And actually, we've got some, if you've not got the chat box open, it would be great for you to have a read through, because there's some brilliant stuff coming out of it. And I think essentially, if a social worker was to come into my world and say, okay, Annie, you want to have a look in your fridge? I'd say, okay, can you show me yours? You know, let's have a look at yours then, and we'll compare and we'll see who's the healthiest. And because I would feel that actually that's fair at the minute, because you're in your own home. Now, that might not be fair and it might not feel comfortable at all, but I guess it's something that we're going to have to get to grips with, because you are in your own home and we are in our homes. And this is just the way in which we're working. I guess trying to bring all these points together, we've had just some fantastic stuff in the chat. We will save all of this and we will discuss it more later. Not later, I'm busy later, but next week, in a week's time when we do the Q&A. But I guess to bring this all together, in terms of building relationships, I think that the main things that we've learned today are around checking in with yourself. You at the moment, as the assessor, you need to be okay in yourself. You need to be grounded. You need to be centered. And as much as you can, you need to be as distraction free. That's not always easy. You're in your own home. I have a cat, Clive, who is crying at my door at the moment. So I'm aware of you lot, but I'm also aware he wants his tea. So I might be in the middle of an assessment thinking, great, cat needs his tea. So that distracting. However, those distractions can be a really good thing. And I've seen some of those brilliant examples in the chat. One lady living on a barge, which, can I come and visit? That sounds great. But actually it's provoked some laughs. Children coming in, cats jumping up, dogs going mad, husbands wandering in. My husband keeps wandering into meetings. My husband wandered into a recorded interview the other day with, he'd found balloon modelling in our bedroom. Don't ask, it was nothing. Phil, don't make any referrals. There's nothing to do with that. But he found balloon modelling and he'd made some reindeer antlers. He knew I was being recorded in a live interview and he walked into the living room with reindeer antlers atop his head. I just had to go with it and I just had to say, right, sorry about this. You come here, this is what I'm dealing with, you know. And now that, if I was a social worker doing an assessment, I'd probably do the same thing, to be honest. I'd probably not be thrilled that my husband was then seen, and I'd probably think, oh God, you know, ooh, this doesn't go well. And to have all these normal fears, normal anxieties that this person has come into my world and I didn't necessarily want that to happen. But actually, at the core of this, we're all human beings. And it shouldn't be one rule for one and one rule for another. Sometimes it has to be. And I think that we all get that. But yeah. I think in terms of building a relationship, it's about that mutual interaction. It's about acknowledging this is a really tough, challenging situation. You as a social worker will find this hard for your own reasons. You'll have your own demands, your own children, your own husbands who do mad things with balloons, and your own home, and you know the housework hasn't stopped. So everything, and don't children eat a lot more now? My kids keep going, I'm hungry, you know, it's like 8 an hour ago. So all of these things are normal, and I think acknowledge them makes us more human, and breaks down the barriers where we're not feeling. Social worker person who I'm assessing, So I think that if we can take that from today, I think it would be great if we came back next week, if people are able to do so, and to talk a bit more about how you build a relationship. There's been some fantastic examples in chat. I'd love those people to come back and perhaps speak live about that if they'd be comfortable. You don't have to have your camera on. You can just talk with your microphone on. That's fine. Don't worry. We won't judge you. We will all judge your hair if you do come on camera. Obs. But yeah, come back next week and let's keep this conversation going. A fortnight today is our second webinar, which will be again me, Helen and Phil, and we'll be talking about information gathering, which is of course the main part of the assessment, the main purpose of the assessment. Or is it not that it's maybe about building a relationship and there's a little bit of information gathering? And then our last webinar, we'll look at decision making and we'll tie this all together. So we look forward to seeing you then. I hope today's been helpful. It's been amazing seeing so many happy smiley faces. I've been kind of trying not to catch people's eye because it's really distracting. Something. Oh, she's got nice curtains and things like that. Find out who she is, message her. And I'm just really aware of my cats as well and the other one at the door. So thank you for your patience. I think the tech has gone okay. Thank you to Phil for your time. I really appreciate you being Welcome. With us.
It's a pleasure.
Thank you to Helen as well for your time. I think your children will be very pleased to be able to go back online now, yes?
They will indeed, yes.
My children are going to come back like drowned rats because it's peeing down. I'll just hide them in the bath. It'll be all right. So thank you very much for your time today. We'll leave the chat open for a while if you want to continue the conversation, if you want to leave details of your own organisation. And you can contact us or you can contact me at annie@strengthenandpractice.co.uk if you'd like to offer any feedback, ask any questions or anything about these webinars. Thank you very much for your time, and we'll see you hopefully in a week's time. See you later.
Thank Bye. You very much, Bye, everybody. All.